Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Cheater and the Road. Welcome to another show, final show of 2012. I'm Jeff Chrysler, author of Get Rich Cheating. That's where the cheating thing comes from. And perhaps joining us at some point is the Rude Pundit, Lee Papa, at Rude Pundit. But you know what? Part of his character is being rude, and that involves not letting his co-host know if and when he might join him. So just in case it's any minute now, let's talk poorly about him and say that he is a nice guy. He just has some things he needs to work through, which I think kind of goes for the rest of us too, don't you think? Matt Lauer, Norman Schwarzkopf, all these people, they all have things to work through. Some of them have run out of time. As you can tell, I've looked at the front page of Huffington Post today, and that's all I remember was Schwarzkopf, Lauer, and some other stuff, probably side boob. Hey, everyone. This is Jeff Chrysler. You're listening to Cheater on the Road. We're here every Thursday. Following us every Thursday is also the Final Edition Radio Hour. Mwah, 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 mwah. A fantastic reprise of the style of the National Lampoon Radio Hour. It is highly produced and very funny. You should listen to that because the Final Edition Radio Hour is 30 minutes of... I got nothing. It's good. You should check it out, though. This is our last show of the year. I'd like to invite anyone out there listening live to give a ring at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And I expect that our lovely and talented engineer, Giselle, will interrupt me with thousands of calls, and I'll filter them out just to the basic bare minimum. People, when you call, start with your New Year's resolution and then get to your question or your point. I will not discuss anything with you without a resolution in hand, and I promise not to mock it, because, you know what, who am I to judge what self-improvement really is? I'm, you know, calling you from San Francisco. Exactly. See, what do I know about self-improvement? I just go to a city because I think it'll make things better. My things, I mean, my in-laws, family, who... live here, so they want to see their adorable son, who, as you may recall, about a year ago, most of the shows in this network at this time slot with this person were about me cleaning poop off his downtown area because he was just a baby. Now he's a little bit older, still a baby, but walking and talking, much like the Tea Party, if you will. At first we thought it was adorable, even though it made a lot of poo. Now it's walking and breaking things, and we realize it's not adorable. Although, by we, I would suggest not me. Not most of us listening. I think most of us saw what it was, that it was a destructive force. But now, it's like a little anchor. It has an incredible mass, and it's just pulling things down. But that's what the right has always done so well. They've always had an extreme negotiating position. They've treated the game of politics much more aggressively than the left ever has. The Progressive Radio Network is a place where you might talk like progressives do and discuss and actually be open-minded. The right doesn't treat things that way. They think what they want, then they go 7 to 10 steps beyond that, figuring that we'll just change the conversation to be like, we can't go that. That's like 4 or 5 steps too far. You know. Well, you do the math, because it's not clear that I kept my parameters the same, because 4 to 5 and 7 to 10.
What are you talking about?
Oh, hey, everybody, put away the pictures. It sounds like Lee Papa has joined us.
Hey, this is Lee Papa, writer of the blog, The Rude Pundit, rudepundit.blogspot.com.
We were just talking about negotiating tactics. And my point I was going to get to, which you can chime in on, and you can also give us an update on your attack from the right-wing hate machine.
Oh, that's over. There's my update.
That was disappointing.
Yeah, sorry.
I was hoping for some sort of,
you know,
urinal cake-based violence. Did I tell you my strategy? Go on, you talk.
No, I was going to say something shiny caught their attention, and it's over.
Mm. Was it Michelle Malkin's battery being recharged?
You mean the batteries on her, 20-horsepower vibrator that's the only thing that she can get any feeling in her calloused clit after all this time?
I'm not familiar enough with engineering to know if 20 horsepower is impressive.
I think it
seems like a lot of,
I mean, think about
horses.
That. Think about the power of 20 horses going into Michelle Malkin's snack.
No. Stop. We were having an adult conversation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want me to go? I'll go. I'm sorry.
No, I don't want you to go. I want you to stay. Hold me. I don't want to think about anything and Michelle Malkin, frankly. If she's part of the disease, it's the negotiating tactic. I think we've touched on before where the right decides what they want, then they go five steps farther crazy, figuring that we'll be like, that's three steps too far. And there you go. We end up at four steps. And the latest thing that's kind of annoyed me is this fact that the gun conversation has now become about whether or not we should have armed principals. But the NRA has succeeded. The NRA, Wayne LaPierre, we say he's a crazy man, but he's done his job, which is that he's changed the conversation. It's no longer about guns at all. It's no longer about gun safety. It's about should there be guns in armed guards in school, which is such an absurd thing. We actually did a sketch about it on the final edition like 9 months ago, as others I'm sure have. But now people are seriously engaging in that discussion when it's just a distraction. And in the end, we'll be like, you know what, we settled the problem with Sandy Hook by only having every other superintendent armed.
I'm trying to think if I would want my high school principal to have a gun, Mr. Bourgeois. I don't know if I would want him to. I don't think I know definitely I wouldn't have wanted the assistant principals to have access to guns because I think they'd have just been offing students left and right. But the principal, I don't know that I would have trusted him with a gun. He seemed so sad. He would have been more likely to just kill himself in his office than anything else.
Yeah, and then taxes would have gone up because your public had to clean the office and there had been trauma and had to build a new school. And you can't be building a new school every year.
No, not at all. Oh, it's so fun. This whole discussion about guns and how juvenile it is. It's not about anything significant. It's just about how much can, you're right, exactly as you said, how much can they manipulate the conversation to make it seem like something maybe was done enough to placate enough people to tilt the whatever poll, Gallup or whatever, back in their favor.
Right.
You know, not to mention please the gun manufacturers and their investor masters.
Right. Well, it's a tactic. I think the right has always been so successful at it, just demanding the absurd so that the left can seem like a one-word and say, we didn't give them an absurd, we gave them everything else.
Yeah.
But they've taken that, but even that wasn't good enough for them. Now with this, you know, the Grover Norquist pledge where they back themselves in a corner, they can't have any... You know, we could be like, we're going to lower the tax rate to 1%. No, that's not good enough.
Wow. Did you hear that the one of the Koch brothers, speaking of negotiating, you know, we're sort of, this is the last, this is our last episode before we go off the fiscal cliff. So, you know, I hope you've enjoyed this before we take our wily coyote plunge and where America just hits the bottom and just puts up a puff of dust.
Yeah, our funding is going to be cut off. We're going to have to start
self-funding. We have
funding. Yeah, totally.
Giselle, do we have funding? Giselle, get on mic. Do we have funding?
No, we don't.
Okay, there we go.
Well, that's because of the fiscal cliff. We
yeah.
had funding until you said those words,
oh,
and then
God
we lost it.
So, but the latest thing is that one of the Koch brothers organizations, I don't know, America's at the crossroads of, you know, motherfuckers, I don't know. And they've put out something essentially threatening members of Congress, saying if they pass the Sandy relief bill, essentially threatening that they'll be primaried if they vote for Sandy relief.
What a bunch of asshats. Didn't the tornadoes in the middle of the country give them any clue?
Oh, who knows? Who knows anymore? You know, this.
Isn't that like when they threatened their... It's before, and when they threatened their employees of their company with getting fired if they voted for Obama. Now they're just skipping right ahead to the members of their employees in the Congress and threatening them with being replaced. Am I right? Am I right, people?
You know what? It's like here's the way I think about Congress right now. It's like you have a lot of people that are trying genuinely to stick to principles and try to negotiate something, but they're also but they're facing off against suicide bombers. And the suicide bombers, they don't give a shit. They're going to blow up. So we say, okay, you know, we'll go up to 400,000 on the raising taxes, up to people, up to, you know, income up to $400,000. That's not good enough. Boom, suicide bomber goes off, you know? And that's because, and so they're just gonna, they don't give a shit. They just want to blow the place up. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no sense of any kind of duty to the nation. There's no sense that there is a huge portion of the population that wants them to negotiate something. They don't give a shit because they are fanatical suicide bombers. They just wield their legislative votes and their filibusters instead of wearing, you know, vests with explosives on it.
But they're fanatics that hide behind religion and the mistreatment of women. So they're
like suicide bombers.
The Taliban. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Taliban's maybe too light a word. Too weak comparison.
No, I think Taliban's good. I think America, you know, well, somebody wrote a book called American Taliban, Marcos Melitzis of Daily Kos, and there was a huge, you know, the right just went, oh my God, they called us the American Taliban, oh, boo-hoo-hoo. It's like a column I read this week by some Breitbart douche hat. That is a douche hat or douche nozzle? I guess a douche, you know, if you have a douche hat. Anyway. It's not an episode without a low-hummed girl from Ipanema. Okay, so anyway.
Douche hat, douche nozzle, doesn't matter because it's about a douche, which is what the girl
from Ipanema cleans. Yeah, well, this douche, Ben Shapiro, actually wrote something about how liberals are bullying the NRA.
Yeah, you know, I'm tired of the people in power getting their feelings hurt. It was like Obama, you know, had lower taxes. Everybody made more corporate profits, and yet a couple words here and there, and suddenly the rich were all boo-hoo, our feelings are hurt. You know what? You're rich. You get to, like, buy feelings. Like, and same with all these people. Like, the NRA is getting vilified. How is the NRA the victims, like, literally, of a shooting? No, they're not. So we're saying is everybody's stupid.
You know what? It's the end of what was a pretty, you know, yes, we had the Obama victory, but and now it's come out. What did Tag Romney say in an interview? That
he didn't even want it.
Mitt Romney wanted to be president less than any person he's ever met. Which must have made all those people that spend hundreds of millions of dollars trying to polish that turd into some acceptable, sparkly form for voters just so happy.
Right. Well, my question was, upon reading that, a few things. First of all, how many people has Tag Romney hung out with that wanted to be president? And also, I think it's probably accurate. I don't think Romney ever wanted to be president. I think he just wanted to win the presidency. I think he just wanted to be like, look, Dad, I can do it. And
I did,
not actually.
You couldn't. So, like George W. Bush getting a second term, are we allowed to say bad things about the Bushes since it looks like Poppy's going to die?
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
fuck that guy.
No, I mean, like, you can be like, he was a president that didn't kill everyone. There, that's a nice thing we said about him.
No, Poppy Bush, there was a ton of bad. You know what? We just look back fondly on Poppy Bush because he wasn't completely, you know, monkey.
Because he was willing to. He was a terrible president, but he did, for instance, the raising of taxes because the country needed it. And look, then we suddenly had a decade of a booming economy.
He raised taxes because Congress had him cornered on it. That's why he raised taxes. It wasn't that he was making any kind of great ideological stand.
But he didn't make the great ideological stand that people believe, that people on the right believe he should have, which is to veto until his wiener fell off.
Well, you know, considering all the other things he did, you know, like the Persian Gulf War, and anyway, we don't need to get into, you know what, if Poppy dies, we'll do a Poppy retrospective. For those of you that don't know, Poppy is George H.W. Bush, who really was a president, nestled somewhere in the taint of American history between Reagan and Clinton.
I'm kind of upset now that we've been called out on the girl from Ipanema.
Oh, you mean that...
Don't.
Okay. Don't alienate our one listener.
Exactly.
Aw, come on.
The Girl from Ipanema is a quality song to just drop in now and then. Now I feel self-conscious about it.
Well,
before, it was a natural thing.
Maybe you should pay attention to things on Twitter.
What? No, it's all I have, Lee.
Oh,
all I have. All I have is retweets, man. It's what it's come down to. You
wow.
know, like, it's one thing... I just think like America, we need to get our passion back. You know, America, that's the thing. Bear with me. We talk about how things are sort of the same with the right and their treatment of reality and their pursuit of their goals and money and fiscal cliffs and guns and everything. And on some level you think, well, the election was a slap that the American people don't want this. It's like, yeah, well, that's all it was a little slap. Like slapping an army guy in the face. Like, they're still going to keep on marching. So the left, like, pours all its energy, all of its money, all of its mojo into this election, and the right just keeps marching along. If you think about it, you know, people like Adelson and the Koch brothers, part of the business is you take a loss now and then, but you keep moving. Whereas the progressives is like, that was their only bet. Whereas, you know, the others are betting all the time. They're like the vampire squid, the Goldman Sachs that bets against and with its clients. They just keep betting because eventually they'll make money.
I got to admit, man, and only because I want you to explain, I kind of don't understand what you just said.
Okay. That makes three of us. The right, the moneyed far right, sure, in some ways they quote-unquote lost the election in that Obama won a landslide, and the Senate, they got more seats for the Democrats, and they actually got more House votes, even if the gerrymander didn't work, and blah, blah. So you think this whole thing, like, the election sent a message. I mean, if Bush's 2004 re-election by a questionable Ohio victory was a broad, sweeping mandate, as Cheney put it, then this was certainly more so. However, it's the same things are happening. The same characters are putting forth the same arguments. And part of that is because they don't care what happened in the election. It kind of doesn't matter. It would have been nicer for them if they had a Republican Congress, Republican president, and everything like that, but still they lost. They keep marching on. Whereas I feel like the left rallies its energy and its forces for, like, the one big election every 4 years. The left, that's what it does. It rallies all its energy and resources into that moment. And it happens, and it passes, and then we're exhausted, and we just expect things to change. Whereas the right is a more methodical, marching machine. They just keep going. Sure, they'll take the punches of losing an election, but that doesn't change them at all. I mean, what change have you seen in the right, except that they're kind of talking about, well, maybe we should rein in this Tea Party? They're not going to rein in shit. They're going to keep on marching.
No, that's because all of their funders, they don't want that change. They, you know, they're not just beholden to Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers and, you know, others, but they're also beholden to the NRA and the religious right, which wants to hold them to some positions that the most of America simply doesn't find tenable anymore.
Right.
And
but,
so what are they going to do? There was something I read today that Nate Silver wrote on the 538 blog, saying that essentially because of gerrymandering, and, you know, gerrymandering on the Democratic and on the Republican side, but most obviously and most prominently on the Republican side, there's only something like 37 House seats, 37 or 47 House seats that are truly could go either way, Democratic or Republican, as far as the demographics of the various districts go. And I mean, think about that there's no longer, there may no, the, things have may have been screwed to such an extent by redistricting that the House may not be able to be turned Democratic, even if we go over the fiscal cliff and come 2014, we're in complete disarray because of what assholes the Republicans have been. We can't even get it back because of it.
Yeah, we can't get it back until 2020.
Right.
Or 2022.
That's assuming that Republicans can win enough state houses at that point so that when redistricting is done again, we can possibly redistrict it back to our favor. But
it was a great success of the right. It was almost like in 2010, that election was essentially all Swift voted. That they let the Tea Party outrage against the false narrative of what Obamacare is about sweep everything to the right. And it wasn't countered. I mean, the left didn't do a good job. I mean, the continued failure of selling the success of Obamacare meant that we lost 2010, that the left was just wiped out, and all the right repercussions of it are greater than this election we just had has less long-term impact than that one, unless somehow Scalia and Thomas get run over by a truck.
You know what? I never mind. I've already caused enough trouble.
Yeah. You don't want to say anything that you should
I don't want to say anything that will get me a visit from anybody that I don't want to see.
Dun, 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 dun. There's got to be. Can we come up with another song then, at least? I mean, for me? For our moments of soft reflection besides Girl from Ipanema?
Yeah, because it's starting to get.
Is there a certain Star Wars nostalgia happening right now in the world that I'm not aware of?
It's not nostalgia. Now that Disney owns Star Wars, they're making a new Star Wars movie.
All right. Hey, speaking of any movies, any holiday fare strike your fancy?
I haven't seen. I want to see Django Unchained.
You probably saw Lincoln.
What'd you think of Lincoln? I saw it too.
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it was an interesting thing in that it lacked a traditional plot.
Yes. Spoiler alert, though, the 13th Amendment passes.
What?
Sorry, I needed to give it away.
I thought the ending was a little tacked on with the ending. That could have been some more dramatic way to end.
That was one of those fuck you Spielberg endings.
Yeah.
Like the end of every goddamn, just end the fucking movie, you know? It should have ended, those of you that have seen it, there's this carriage ride with the Lincolns. Would have been a perfect ending.
Or when he's walking down the hall to go to the theater. Anyway, the ending was a little meh, and I thought, but I thought it was pretty well. It was interesting to see a lot of New York actors coming through in major roles, and I thought it was well put together. I just what I can't wrap my head around is that stuff interests me. So to me, there was a narrative and a plot and some interesting points in, you know, rounding up votes and arm-twisting people. But, you know, except for the occasional flashes with him and his wife and him and his son, there wasn't a lot of, like, traditional boy meets girl human interaction, human, like, relatable to the family conflict in it. So it made it sort of an interesting challenge to produce. And I thought it was done well. But, again, that stuff interests me, so I don't know how
it does. Other than Tommy Lee Jones, who was I thought was great, to me, I saw it and I thought that was exactly the movie that I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Except for the surprising amount of anal sex in it. I mean,
right.
I got to admit, I did not see that.
They had all those horses, and you can't let horsepower go to waste.
Well, and how much, you know, Mary Todd Lincoln just loved getting fucked in the ass. It was just...
Right. And don't forget, the Lincoln was a Republican.
Right.
So that's sort of, it comes down to generations from Mary Todd Lincoln to Michelle Walken.
And, you know, I didn't really, I guess it makes sense that what drove Mary Todd Lincoln into her depression was sort of the guilt she had over the pleasure she received from anal sex. And
mm-hmm.
so And a surprising amount of the movie was, this will surprise anybody that goes to see it, is given over to the treatment of 19th century venereal disease.
Yeah. Well, what I thought was neat was how, at least in the showing that I saw, they actually had people spraying the audience with, like, sort of a liquid form of syphilis.
Really?
And, yeah, and it was, I guess there was the front section, you know how the theaters are divided into sections now, you walk through, there's a front and above. Some movie theaters, the front section, I guess, actually got gangrene. They, like, gave them, like, had, you know, 18th century bayonets cutting people.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I think that would be called 5D. So real. So real, you can reach out and touch Mary Todd's anal warts.
Yeah, I thought she was my companion for the movie thought she was an interesting choice for
That's all pretty
spouse.
Much you can say is she's an interesting choice.
It was, you know, I mean, she did fine. It was just the age. She's no young spring chicken.
Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't buy, you know, her having a postmenopausal child, but okay.
What do you think the Octomom is up to these days? We've got 2 minutes, Lee.
We've got 2 minutes to fill? Oh, Jesus Christ. So, yes, I want to see Django Unchained. I want to see Les Mis. Do you think, yes or no, fiscal cliff, are we going off?
Yeah, I don't give a fuck. I hope we go off.
Why
go
do you
off,
hope we go off?
And then go off, and it'll be a fight to see who can propose, you know, middle-class tax cuts first. Can you get that done?
What about
we'll
the
say the question. It's all a load of shit. Again, it's just more negotiating. Let's do the extreme stuff. Let's just put a screech on any progress by taking us backwards in time. Like, what are your new? Give me a New Year's resolution, even if you don't have one.
My New Year's resolution is to really raise the level of my drunken ranting. Because I believe it's gotten too low key, and also to spend less time masturbating and more time having sex.
Well, I'll see if I can give Michelle Malkin a call.
I was going to
Michelle Malkin. And
Michelle Malkin. Oh God, no! It'd be like I'd rather dangle my balls over a bear trap than have sex with Michelle Malkin.
See, that to me doesn't sound unpleasurable, dangling over a trap. It sounds exciting. Because you're like, ooh, this could go either way.
Having
it clamped in a bear trap sounds terrible, but dangling over a bear trap.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like a test of one's manhood.
You know what? That's what I like to think of the nation right now. The nation is a pair of testicles dangling over a bear trap.
This has been another episode of Cheater and the Rude. This is the final episode of 2012. If we make it to 2013, maybe we'll talk to you again. I'm Jeff Chrysler. Check it out on the Facebook for Cheater and the Rude or on the Twitter for Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Lee Papa, and you can also check me out on Twitter at Rude Pundit. Happy New Year, and is it Kwanzaa yet? I don't know.
It's a quandary about Kwanzaa. Be safe, everyone. See you next year.
Bye.